Just a friendly reminder that the opinions expressed on this show are not worth a Canadian penny, so disregard anything you hear that might get anyone in trouble. And despite some of the great ideas you may hear, don't try them at home. Go to a friend's house instead.
It's time to get a gun. That's what I've been thinking. Well, I could afford one. And if I did just a little less drinking, time to put something between me and the sun. Time to get a gun.
Hey everybody, and welcome to episode 55 of Slam Fire Radio for May 22nd, 2014. I'm Trevor Furlott.
May 22nd, huh? We have gone ahead in the future.
Oh, you want to scratch that or what?
Scratch that? Are you kidding me?
Well, I'm taking a take two anyway. Hi everybody, and welcome to episode May 2nd for episode 214. I'm episode 55.
Close enough. And I'm Matthew somebody or other. And Owen's not with us tonight because apparently his wife is more important than we are. Whatever.
Well, have you met his wife or seen his wife? Because frankly, I would drop us for his wife too. I don't know if that's creepy or inappropriate, but
probably,
I'm just saying.
Probably Travis a little bit of column A, a little bit of column B.
All I'm saying is Travis from the Gun Dudes is not the only podcaster with a hot wife. That's all I'm saying.
Alrighty then.
He's going to cut me.
He's got big swords to do it with, too.
They're made of wood.
She might cut you.
That's true. She has her own AR-15.
Yeah, she might just shoot you.
I mean, no disrespect.
Of course. Of course. So, yeah. Welcome to the show, everybody.
Indeed. Welcome. McClatchy.
Yes, sir.
Why don't you regale us with tales of firearm enthusiasm throughout the past week?
Can I? I like the way you put that. Can I begin with a retraction and a correction?
That's funny because you don't know your Canadian geography.
I certainly don't. I've never been in farther
the
west
same
than...
The same person who picked on you for the Princess Bride quote. Actually, you know, you should know how to quote Princess Bride is, I believe, what he said.
Oh, okay.
Also said McClatchy doesn't know geography.
Right. So I think we could just... flip that around, though, and ask people from the West Coast, you know.
Please. People in Moncton don't even know where Dalhousie is.
I know. Crazy. Anyway.
There's nothing out here for them to need to know about.
No.
The country moves in one direction, and it's not this one.
So apparently Smithers, BC is not Smithers, Alberta.
No.
No. It is actually Smithers, BC. It hasn't moved.
And Surrey is pronounced Surrey.
Right. What did we say?
Oh, Owen said Souris?
Souris, that's right. Souris. And I believe I corrected him, but we were like, no, we're running with this.
Yeah.
So it was Souris. But,
and it's Sault Ste. Marie?
Sault. No, Sault. Sault Ste. Marie.
Yeah, okay.
we got a messed up country. But anyway, yeah, no, Steve and I will be flying into Smithers, but we're staying and hunting in Worsley, Alberta, which is just north of Grand Prairie. So anybody in that area, I knew it was Alberta, and I knew I was flying into Smithers. I just didn't know that they were on opposite sides of a border. So I just assumed they were both in the same province, but whatever. I was wrong. There, I was wrong for this year. Won't happen again.
But the important thing to remember is that you want to shoot other people's ammo at another province's gophers.
That's correct. So anybody who wants to take Steve Lee and I out on a gopher hunt or any other type of hunt for all we care, you know, we're in. We'll be there for quite a few days, so let us know what you got and we'll be there. And if not, no worries. We just know we aren't loved and we'll just kind of hang our heads and cry a little bit.
You don't need to go out there to find out you're not loved. Trust me, I can tell you right now. You don't need to get on an airplane to find that out.
Oh, well then, I just saved myself a bunch of money.
Yeah. Yeah.
So anyway, gun-related stuff. I actually did this last week, but forgot to tell you about it, so I thought I'd mention it today because I didn't do anything else gun-related this week, except play with pellet guns, but apparently that doesn't count.
It does if you're in Ontario.
It does if you're in Ontario?
There's a case in front of the courts right now, right?
Right, because they're trying to argue that pellet guns are actually real guns, which they are not.
And Chris Kingston went to the Provincial Firearms Advisory Committee meeting, and somebody down there was shown a video of this AR-15 BB gun and how it could very quickly, like within seconds with a Dremel, be converted into a full auto BB gun. And I'm like, the only question I have about all of this is, why don't I have one?
Yeah, and here's another thing. You can already buy full-auto BB guns in Canada, and they're perfectly 100% legal.
Yeah, so why are they wasting time?
What's the big deal?
Yeah, why are they wasting time at the Provincial Firearms Advisory Committee talking about
BB guns? You'll shoot your eye out, kid. I mean, what else are they going to do with them? I'll sting you. If you don't give me that money from the cash register, I'll put a big welt in your forehead. Like, come on. Ah, it's ridiculous. Anyway, I did receive and install the Magpul grip on my AR. Mm-hmm. So that's what I did last week. And so I guess the highlight of the story is that the hole isn't lined up properly.
Oh, yeah, you did talk about that.
I talked to you about that. I didn't talk to the show about that, I don't think.
All right, okay.
So, yeah, the hole wasn't... When I put it on the gun, the hole wasn't in the right spot. So I had to take my drill out and actually move the hole a little bit so that the screw would go through and actually tighten onto the gun properly. So that was a bit of a disappointment, but, I mean, in the end, it's still very, very tight. It's not wiggly at all. In fact, it went on so tight it bit me, gave me a beautiful blood blister on the side of my finger, which was great fun. But, yeah, no, that's literally all I did with guns. I haven't been shooting real guns in... well, no, that's not true. I've actually got my Glock on right now, and I've been dry firing, just getting some practicing draw from the holster and sight picture, sight alignment, trigger press, that sort of thing. But no real shooting yet.
You know, early on, how your first Glock, you had a real hard time to keep the dot in the notch while dry firing?
Yes.
Think about this. Back then, your grip was not as refined as it is now, correct?
When I last had a Glock, it was before I had taken the Black Badge.
And think about this. The trigger pull on a Glock is heavier than the weight of a Glock.
Yes, it is.
So it's very, you know, it's hard to hold a gun still when it takes more pressure to depress the trigger than it does to hold the gun up.
Yep.
You know, so...
And that's what was happening. I was pulling the trigger, and it took so much force to pull the trigger, and I did not have a good grip. I didn't know what I was doing grip-wise with guns before my Black Badge course. The Black Badge course was only rudimentary instructing on how to do it. I've refined it since then, and you've shown me some techniques that you gleaned from the Mag 40 class and whatnot. You know, and it's night and day now. Now I can actually press a trigger without the sight moving. So,
mm-hmm. I mean, you look at newbies who are shooting double action guns or even heavy striker fired guns. If their grip is not right, and they wonder why their groups are so big or inaccurate. You know, Pat brought this comment up just in passing really quickly during last week's show. And he's like, well, when your trigger pull is more than the weight of the gun, it's hard to keep the gun still.
Yeah, I remember listening to that when he said that, and that's a very good point. I think that's a really big reason why a lot of people go with double action, single action guns. Yes, that first trigger pull is tough, but once you're past that, everything is, you know, very, very lightweight trigger pulls for production anyway.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. So now that he's here, do we have to like apologize for?
No, I think we just ignore him and just carry on.
Okay. Maybe he somehow heard my comments. And
he might have heard your comments. He will have heard your comments eventually.
He will have heard eventually.
Hey, I have time traveler language skills.
And bow hunting skills.
and nunchuck skills.
Nunchuck skills, yeah.
All right. So, Owen, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much.
Thank
very,
you for
very
joining
happy to be
us.
Here.
Yes.
I'm glad I was able to make it.
So are we.
Yes, we are.
Owen, I know that you think I was busy, and that's why you wanted to start the show early.
No.
So that I would get, you know.
We were very clear with the listeners why you weren't here. We didn't hold it against you.
Oh, dear.
And again, remember, I meant no disrespect.
That's right.
Just keep, please promise me you'll keep that in mind when you listen to the show.
And listen carefully that I don't ever actually agree with him.
Son of a gun, you did let me hang out there, didn't you?
I certainly did.
Also remember, Owen, that I'm an idiot. And I can't be held responsible. Because I'm unmedicated.
Okay, crud.
Let's carry on. Owen, what did you do this week in Guts?
Nothing.
All right.
Thanks for joining us. Come back next week.
But that's not true. You were on a podcast.
Oh, yeah. Well, I did do that, and we talked about gardening. Can I talk about gardening now?
Oh, no. Not on the show. No, that's a negative.
Yeah. Wait,
can I
did you...
chickens?
Wait, now, if you fertilize your garden with the ground-up bones of chickens that you harvested and killed yourself, maybe.
With a shotgun, after throwing them in the air.
I was thinking bare hands. What did talk I about gardening.
Week? Well, no, well, I don't need to talk about gardening.
Well, what show were you on?
Well, yes, I suppose they would like me to mention that, wouldn't they?
They probably would. Yeah.
I cannot talk tonight.
Welcome to the show.
And I'm only drinking water.
Yeah, but it's okay. Woodstock water.
Yeah, that's true too. And we're going to turn the ringer off on the phone.
You can do that.
Styx and Toby have a podcast. Most probably some of the listeners know who they are. Called the Armed... What is it called? The Armed Squirrels Project. Not the Armed Squirrels Podcast. It's the Armed Squirrels Project Podcast.
It's
Man.
Squirrel. Singular. Squirrel. Armed Squirrel.
Even though there's two of them?
Yes.
Okay. Whatever. Anyway,
there's only actually one squirrel in the show.
Right, that's true.
Well, no, not the shows I've listened to. There's all kinds of squirrels.
Yeah, so Toby, I guess, is sick as a dog and just, I mean, I'm sick too, but I manned up.
That's, but, yeah. That's awesome. Yep, carry on.
So they contacted me the night before, but it was too late that night. So, a couple nights ago, I went on with Styx and we talked gardening and chickens and it was great. And you'd think I would have got it out of my system, but now I just want to talk about it more.
Well, you also talked a little bit about bear hunting and I'm glad that you're here because that is our topic for tonight, by the way. We're going to talk about bear hunting.
Well, yes, it would have been very unfortunate if I had missed that part.
Well, it's better when two out of the three hosts have actually shot bears, right?
Yep. Yeah, I did do a little bear hunting. Well, not bear hunting. I did a little bear prepping this week. I prepped one of my baits and kind of poked around for a second one, though I didn't really find a good spot.
But, well, we're going to discuss how to select a spot.
Right, so I'll leave that then. So, yeah, that was about all I did with my gun. Is I walked around with a .22 for a little bit this week. So,
because a .22 is perfect bear defense, right?
Well, it is.
Is
really.
It Thursday again?
Especially one that hasn't been sighted in.
Right. Yeah, you don't need to sight them in. 22s are that accurate that you don't need to sight them in. You just point and click. It's all good.
Well, I thought they were heat-seeking. Isn't that what's so deadly about them? I could have shot a grouse. There was one that sitting beside my truck when I got out of it.
Yeah, if you wanted to be a poacher, you could have shot a grouse.
That's right.
I saw one today, too. Grouse flew down. I saw a grouse, two osprey, and two whitetails in Charlo, of all places.
Nice.
Yeah, there hasn't been a season in my zone since 1993, and I saw two whitetails today.
Are we playing the wildlife game? Because I saw two moose recently. I also heard grouse starting their mating calls.
You sure it wasn't your heart?
I'm pretty sure this time it was grouse. First time I heard it, I thought I was about to die. I thought it was my heart like failing or something. It was
couldn't
so
feel
weird.
Anything in my chest. But
no, I could. I could feel it. That's the thing. The bass, like he must have been really close or something because it was loud enough that I could
that day.
I could feel it. I was like, oh my goodness, I'm going to die in the woods and no one's going to find my body. But apparently it was just grouse. They beat logs or something with their wings and it makes this really weird drumming noise.
What? They beat their chest. What are you talking about, logs?
I don't know. Sorry, I looked my information up on the internet. And as we know, the internet is always true. So whatever, Trevor. Like you think you know everything.
I also saw a bear actually on the weekend.
Oh, nice.
Sunday night, coming home with the family. And it was a nice-sized black bear.
Cool.
About 50 yards out in the woods, and it stopped. It wasn't going anywhere. We stopped. It looked at us, and I backed up to get a little better look so the kids in the back could get a better angle. And it loped off into the woods. But
cool.
Yeah.
You said, I'll see you later.
Yeah. Yeah, I'll be back.
I'll be back.
All right, well, Trevor, what did you do this week?
I worked the Rescue Gun Club's booth at Promotion Plus. It was a long weekend. We went in there Friday at 3 to set up, and we were there until 5 o'clock on Sunday, so 3 to 9 on Friday, all day Saturday until 9, and then Sunday until 5. real positive. We got lots of traffic. We had comments like, the only reason we're here is to come to this booth to get your information on the kids program. We helped quite a few residents from Quebec get information on how to get licensing in New Brunswick. They actually, because they live right on the border, they'll come over and take their course with us because it's the National Firearms Association, or it's the Canadian Firearms Center that does the course, so it's a national course. So as much as Quebec would like to prevent them from getting trained in New Brunswick, they can't. The reason they come over and take training in New Brunswick is because we put on more courses, we get the paperwork done faster. But the one woman told me that she waited about 3 months longer than everybody else who was in the same course that was a New Brunswick resident to get the same license. Wow. So once you get your paperwork and you submit it on the Quebec side for restricted, it takes it's taking on average 3 months longer to get your restricted license, even if you've been trained in New Brunswick, than it would if you were training in Quebec. So that was kind of neat. We were sharing experiences with our neighbors. Of course, you know, and some of them were complaining about Law 9 and Law 20, and they assumed that we had it here too. The Quebec government sells it to them like it's the norm, right? Some of the Quebec gun owners have no idea that they're being ripped off compared to the rest of us with these extra rules and policies that the government's put on them over there.
Yeah, it's kind of sad that they're, that ignorant of it. And it's not their fault. You know, like you said, it's the government pushing it like it is the norm.
Making them think that it's normal, yeah.
You know, so. I mean, well, why wouldn't they? They don't want the populace to think that they're being screwed over. So it's still sad and unfortunate, though.
It is. So thank God so many of them are joining the NFA and figuring out what's up, right?
Yep.
So we sold a few more memberships this year than we did last year. We sold tickets on the Remington Versamax. We had Nipsic video playing. I was wearing my shooting shirt, my belt, and my holster and my empty mag. So I wasn't dry firing, but I was practicing taking out my mag. Like, I was drawing my mag all day. McIntyre said that one kid was walking by, and I reached for my mag real quick, and he kind of like
just freaked out.
What's that guy doing? So we had we had guns on hand. So we got ATTs to take our guns there. So we had some long guns tied to the table, and then some pistols under glass.
Cool.
Yeah, it was it was a good time.
So if they had put you in a glass booth, could you have had your pistol on and could have practiced dry firing inside a glass booth?
Let's see. If I was locked
inside, if you're in a locked room designed for storage of firearms, I mean, technically that firearm's locked up.
Yeah. Yeah, and if it was really, like, difficult to break into and whatnot, if it would have been, like, a glass safe, I could have taken the trigger lock off.
There you go.
That's the plan for next year. Keep going, watch me dry fire.
All right, Fort Knox, you listening? Make us a glass safe.
My 870 parts arrived mostly. Apparently the barrel clamp got lost between the seats.
Oh,
so unlike Jeff Reed's to make mistakes.
Yeah.
So unlike, I'm like not hardly disappointed, but I'm a little disappointed, you know?
Right. You kind of expected it, really.
No, I didn't.
It's funnier my way.
It is.
Yeah.
Now, if it was Jason Philp sending stuff to me, then I could say, like, you know, well, you've disappointed me for the last time, like I pull a Vader line on him or something.
Right.
But hit him with a piece of walnut. Anyway. So the what's really cool is this time my Magpul, I bought his set of Magpul for his 870, and he threw in not one but two cheek risers.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, because the there's no cheek weld to get to that optic on the 870. It's on the rail, and right. The rail, you actually can, it's a saddle mount that holds shells and an optic on top, and you can actually look underneath the rail, and it acts like a ghost ring sight. You can lie, you know, you've got this tube, you look.
So if your optic fails, you can just look underneath it and you're fine.
I could, until I put the cheek riser on.
Now you can't. Okay.
Yeah, now I actually get a cheek weld when looking through the optic.
Gotcha.
So, and then I got looking at the Magpul stock on my 590 and realized that it wasn't exactly a perfect cheek weld either, because the ghost ring sight on that is obviously up off the back of the receiver. So you're not just looking down the receiver and the barrel at a bead, right? You're still kind of lifting your head up a little bit to look through the ghost ring. So you're actually getting a teeth weld, not a cheek weld.
Which is the best kind of weld, really, yeah. When you think about it. Who doesn't want to shoot a shotgun with their teeth?
Yeah.
Well, so, I don't understand. Like, don't you guys just shoot your shotguns from the hip? I mean, you just kind of point it in the general direction anyway and start pulling the trigger.
At the door, if you're Joe Biden, sure.
Yeah. Do it both barrels.
So, So I put all the Magpul on the 870, and I put the cheek riser on both them, the mag on both the 590 and the 870. So now the 870 is all finished with the exception of the barrel clamps on the way, and I ordered a jumbo safety for it from that place, Brownells. Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah. I ordered, or I'm putting together for the pistol section at our club, shooting shirts. They're going to have your name, your division, our club logo on the back of the shirt that we used at the National. It's going to say Rutgers Gun Club at the top, home of the SummerSlam at the bottom. Like same as our team shirts that we had for Team New Brunswick at the Nationals. So we're getting those from Techwear USA. They're really cool material, like really breathable.
What are those going to run?
I don't know exactly. We're not going to pay full price because we sold sponsorship. We've got the Brick sponsoring one arm, the Village of Balmoral where the club is located, or the Range is located, sponsoring another arm. The official match restaurant for the Nationals and for SummerSlam is on the back, and now we have Crystal Pistols coming on the front. And so all of that sponsorship money is going to come off. Anyway, they're going to be probably somewhere, I'm going to say, between $80 and $120.
Cool.
Depending on how much you get done to design work and whatnot. And then planning the two black badge courses. Myself and McIntyre, he's going to take over half of the classroom component for these two so that he can work on finishing up his instructors.
That's cool.
I think if he's available when Sean Bevins is here, he'll do all of Sean Bevins on his own, and then he'll be certified.
That'll be good. So, you have another instructor there.
Yeah. So that's it for me. Why don't we jump into upcoming events and news? Has anyone taken the trouble to print off the Slamfire Radio flyer and post it on Facebook yet? I don't think so.
No, I haven't seen any. I'm kind of disappointed.
You know what it is?
They hate us and we suck? Oh, wait, no, yes. That's H&K.
No, it's because they don't want to come on the show with us.
That's probably it, yeah. So here's the new deal. Prize. If you do it, we're not going to have you on the show. But if you don't,
we'll force
you're
you on
coming
the show.
On.
Each and every one of you will take a turn. So, yeah, no, seriously, please.
Yeah, it'd be cool.
Put our thing up at your range, please. Next, this had been taken out. I don't know why. I put it back in because there's some new details, so I threw it all in.
It got taken out?
Yeah, it wasn't in there. I had to add it to the show notes.
Weird. Somebody must have accidentally deleted it.
Owen, the fourth annual...
Yes, because I do so much with the show notes.
No, you don't, I'm actually.
Like, I'm like just logging into the show notes now.
The fourth annual... It is fourth, right?
I think so.
Canadian Podcast Network Charity Shoot will take place on June 28th. Registrations at 9 a.m. The cost for this event is $25. That will cover all of your shooting for the day, let's say. You don't have to pay any additional per event. It'll be held at the Rutgers Gun Club in New Brunswick. We will do trap and silhouette simultaneously. Go shoot the trap, then shoot the silhouette, then shoot the trap, whatever. After the trap and silhouette is done, we will all congregate to the rifle range where we will shoot at zombie targets provided by Filthy.
There, because I said Filthy it. Is awesome.
I said it. He has to do it now.
Yep.
And that's just where we socialize, try each other's rifles, etc. After that, there'll be a barbecue that the pistol section is going to put on. That is separate of the charity shoot. You do have to pay for the barbecue if you want to eat something. Or like Owen, you could bring bottled goose and let me eat most of it.
I don't even know if I have any bottled goose.
Oh, no.
I don't even know if I bottled any this year.
Oh, no.
I might have to do that. I've got a bunch in the freezer. I may have to dig it out of the freezer and bottle it just so I can...
There you go. While you're at it, bottle some of that delicious homebrew beer and bring that as well.
Yeah.
And after the barbecue, we're going to move to the back of the range where we will have an IPSC-style mini-match. We will let you shoot basically any handgun that doesn't have wood on it.
That's a lie. You can bring wood if you want.
You know, as long as it's a handgun that's safe and whatnot. Even if you have, if all you have is a .22, We don't care. Just make sure you have like at least three magazines and the proper equipment to hold your magazines and a proper holster that covers the trigger guard. That's
The proper equipment for the magazines isn't terribly required. The holster is the most important thing. It has to cover the trigger guard. If it safely holds your gun, then you're good to go.
Yeah, and this is just for fun. It's just to give people an opportunity to shoot an IPSC style competition. Scoring, I don't think we're going to bother because the scoring last year was a nightmare because people didn't know how to fill out score sheets.
That's right. We're just going to shoot it and have fun.
Yeah. Last year, the scoring went like this. The sheets were all collected, brought back to Selger's camp. Lynn and Harold sat down, started to figure them out.
I thought you were going to say started a fire with them.
No, they sat down. They started working on them. They opened a beer. And about 5 minutes later, the score sheets all went to the fire, and they opened another beer, and that was the end of the scoring.
So, I don't really think we need to score.
No, we're not going to score.
You do it by each. I mean, the guys that want to compete against each other can, when they take their turn shooting that stage, they can tell who.
You can keep track of your your own scores if you like. We're going to still run the timer on it and everything because you got to have
but we're just not going to go through the scoring sheets and the computer system and all that stuff. So, and after that, Trevor's going to sneeze.
Oh, beauty. So after that, there's a party at Serge's camp. You could have muted your mic. That's okay. But the party at Serge's camp is going to be cool.
Then we go back to Serge's camp. Steve Lee's going to perform an acoustic concert at Serge's camp around a bonfire. And Serge is going to cook a rib dinner. So if you want to get ribs and all the fixings, it'll...
Here comes again. It'll be $10 while Trevor mutes his mic this time to sneeze. So very nice of him. Oh, he didn't. I thought he did. So,
So please RSVP because we'd like to either through Facebook or email because we want to get an idea how many people are going to attend for food.
So we know. Yep, we need to plan for that. So,
and I want to double our numbers from when we did it 2 years ago. We had about 24, 25 people.
It'd be cool to get 50.
Yeah, we could get 50 for sure.
I think so.
And a reminder, all the proceeds are going to the Lauren Tides Autism Foundation. They're a nonprofit organization in Quebec that helps support families with autistic children. So it's an extremely important, meaningful charity. It hits home for one of the Canadian podcasters. So please, come on out and support this very important charity.
Yep.
I think I've just about got my wife convinced to come.
Nice. Cool.
She probably won't shoot, but she might come.
I told Christina that she's coming so that Christina could like pick her brain about gardening and stuff like that, right? Because by that time, we should have just started to plant or we'll be planting, right?
End of June?
End of June we should
be you're just getting ready to harvest at the end of June, aren't you?
You better have had your garden in for a month at that point.
Well, I mean, you said so yourself that we won't get anything in for a month. Oh, yeah, we'll get it in at the beginning of June, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, Jules going, so.
Yeah, so all the wives will be there. Julie will be there. Jewel will be there. Amy will be there.
It'll be cool.
Yeah, cool. T-shirt orders. Go bid on the one-of-a-kind long-sleeve shirt on the Facebook page.
Wait, isn't that over? When did we start? When did we say we were going to end that?
I don't know. Did we say we would end it?
We're going to announce the winner next week. There you go. Now it's going to be ended.
Okay. Cool.
So, yes, this is your last week to make a bid on the original one-of-a-kind long-sleeve T-shirt. Go to our Facebook page and put a bid on it. I think the current bid is $75. So
that's, too low.
It is too low. All this money is going to the Laurentides Autism Foundation, same as the charity shoot. So go bid on it, donate some money, and get an uber-cool shirt.
And if you want it autographed, we won't.
We certainly won't.
Practical Armed Response Academy shooting course will take place August 2nd and 3rd. The day one is a defensive handgun course with Mag-40 instructor Tommy Nelson of the Gun Dudes podcast. Day two will be an IPSC club-level match featuring the best stages from SummerSlam. There is one space currently available. Payment was due back in March, so pay now. It's $200. If you need to cancel, you can cancel by the 1st of July to get a full refund. And that's also going to take place at the Rescuers Gun Club, hence the SummerSlam stages. Moving on to the multi-gun match, pre-registration is required this year. Cost is $40. The date's August 16th, 17th. 12 stages, 6 stages a day, shotgun, rifle, and pistol. Uber fun. also going to steal the best stages from SummerSlam. I love it. Sal does all the work. We reap all the benefits. Probably not that I want to, you know, poo-poo on Tommy's course, but probably the coolest thing that we're going to do all summer long, even cooler than SummerSlam, is that Daniel Shaw from Thunderbird Tactical and the Gunfighter cast is coming to Restigouche again. It's the place to be, apparently, to put on his one-day carbine clinic. That'll be on October 11th. It's also $200. 14 people, one spot available. Round count's going to be 400 rounds. Payment is due yesterday. Cancellation on that for a full refund is also the 1st of September. After the clinic, there's a soiree, chef for latte, where I will be serving for lattes and...
Turtle burgers?
Possibly turtle burgers.
Woohoo! Love turtle burgers.
So, cool. All right, McClatchy, what do we got next?
This is an announcement from Chris Anderson. The Spring Swiss Arms Fork It Over fundraiser is a dinner event in support of gun owners who have had their Swiss Arms rifles prohibited. So this is kind of a follow-up to the... audio files he's been sending in, those little commercials to kind of promote this. So this is a bit of an update on it.
The event, I liked it.
They were very well done. I really liked hearing those.
No, that's not what I was going to say.
Oh.
I was going to say, I liked it better when the RCMP had to kick in our doors to steal our guns.
Now they just do it on paper. Yeah, no floods here? Fine, we'll just prohibit them on paper. Anyway, the event is taking place June 21st, 2014 at 5:30 p.m. It was pushed back, so June 21st, so clear your calendar. The location is 6 Eugene Street in Toronto at the Best Kept Secret Banquet Hall. Tickets are $100, and you can purchase them by contacting the banquet hall at thebks.ca. That's the Best Kept Secret, so bks.ca. The guest speaker for the event is firearms lawyer Ed Berlew. The event also features door prizes and auction items, as well as a Las Vegas-inspired dinner buffet. There's a cash bar, and proceeds will go to the fundraising goal.
So drink up.
Yep. Among the items sent by sponsors are a UTAS 12-gauge shotgun donated by Wolverine Supplies. Other
Can't sell them, you might as well give them away.
You funny.
It's ugly.
The other sponsors are Al Flaherty's Outdoors Store, Mystic Precision, Canada Ammo, and Canada in the Rough. For more info, head over to chrisandersonpresents.com, as all event information is listed on the website in the event section. So I will put links to those in the show description on our website, so you can head there to episode 55 and click the links, and you can hear all about what's going on in June this summer. If you're in the area, I highly recommend you go. Why don't we move on to our main topic?
Yes, let's talk Yogi and Boo Boo.
Yogi Boo Boo. Hey, Boo Boo, watch this trick. It's very tricky.
It's springtime, and spring bear seasons are cropping up around the country. As a matter of fact, spring bear in New Brunswick has been on for several weeks now. It opened on the 24th or 26th, something like that. It's usually the third week of April in New Brunswick.
21st, I believe. It might
April
have been
21st
actually.
It opened.
There you go. So it's been open since April 21st, and in this part of the province, you're not getting in the woods.
No, it's way too much snow still.
Yeah.
Especially this year.
Yeah. So. The guys down south usually have, like in your area, Owen or St. John, usually have bears hitting their bait before my bears are even eating grass yet.
Yeah.
So, well, anyway, we're going to talk spring bear hunting and our experiences with it and what Owen and I do. Owen has always hunted his bears with a rifle, and I've only ever hunted my bears with a bow and arrow. So I'll be curious to see how our setups perhaps differ, or maybe they're the exact same, stuff like that. So first off, let's talk spring bear versus fall bear. Have either of you ever tried to hunt bear in the fall?
I've done a lot of trying.
Yeah. Yeah, I tried with Owen last year, too. We went out and didn't get anything.
Yeah. I got surrounded by bears. I got hunted in the fall.
That's right, yeah.
By bears. But
The understanding of hunting bear in this region is that it's far more difficult to get a bear to come to a bait site in the fall because, obviously, they're fed, right?
Yeah.
They're not, and there's a lot more variety of their natural diet available in the fall, so they're not so keen on eating the junk that we throw in the barrels for them.
Well, I don't feed them junk, but
no, but a lot
but
of
still, people, yeah. You look around right now, and there's nothing to eat. I mean, in the woods, there's nothing green yet.
Yeah, everything is still brown. Yeah,
that's the other thing too. It's been my experience that they don't start eating the baits in the springtime until, and generally, I notice this in the along railroad tracks, train lines. That seems to be one of the first places where green grass and little buttercups and certain flowers start to come up, and that's where you see them feeding first. And they don't seem to want to take the bait until they kind of purge their digestive system with some natural grass first. Have you experienced that, Owen?
That would make sense. But again, I don't get my bait out really super early, so it's, you know, I wouldn't say put it down to that's what actually is happening, but that makes sense.
How soon do you usually put out your bait?
Well, I like to have it out when the season starts, but it's usually a week or two after. Like, I just got mine yesterday.
Right.
This year you've got a really good excuse. That's fine.
Yeah. Broken truck, let us know.
Yeah.
Yep.
I've always gotten my bait out. Again, I can't get in the woods until May. And yep. I normally don't put my bait out until the first week of May, and they start hitting around the second week of May, and then every bear that I've shot in around the 24th of May, within a couple of days of the 24th of May.
Okay. That's pretty quick.
Yeah. Yeah, well, after that, when June hits, the mosquitoes will pick you up out of your tree stand.
You don't have a thermocell?
I do. I do, but I don't usually stick around long enough to need it. I'm not fussy either. The first bear comes out is usually the first bear that gets knocked down. I like bear hunting, but then I'm also ready to move on to something else too. By the time the bears start coming, I'm ready to shoot one and go on to the next thing, whether it be Ipsic or. And yep. Truth be told, since I've gotten involved. I shot a bear, I think, my first year I was in Ipsic, and then I haven't shot one since because I've just been too busy with helping teach and get the range ready and stuff like that. So.
Oh, I hear you there. Yeah, the last 2 years, I've hardly hunted at all. I've still done my bait, and I've been out, like, I think last year I was out one night.
Why don't we go in this order? Why don't we talk about where we set up our bait sites and then move into what we use for stink baits and what we feed the bears?
Okay.
So how do you choose the location?
Well, I've had a couple different sites over the years. The first one was really, really good. It was just too stinking far from anywhere to give. Right. It's just a pain to get to. My new one is very accessible, but it's not as good. And what I look for is something that's fairly dense brush. You want to be able to see your bait from your stand, obviously. It's got to be a little bit open, but you want to have lots of brush and evergreens around. Something that makes it feel kind of inviting and protected. My first bait was right in a big, it was a little natural clearing in a big bunch of firs. And so there was, you know, it was very protected. And when you stood in there, you just saw a wall of green all around you. And they like that because they're coming out of the deep woods and they don't want to feel like they're exposed.
Yeah, I also find that if the bear can stay back and not be seen and yet see the bait site,
yep,
they will sit back and they will watch the bait site for quite a while before they actually decide whether or not they're going to come in.
Yep.
So they will often know that you're there, not only by smell but by sight before they come in.
Yep.
I do the same, but something else I always do is I look for a brook. I look for running water. Okay. And I usually sit up not too far from a brook.
Yep.
There's an excellent video on my YouTube channel of the last bear that I shot that shows my setup. And I think there's two videos. There's one simply explaining my setup, where the stand is in relation to the bait site, where the stand is in relation to the water and the direction that the bears come in and the direction that I come in.
Okay, interesting. Yeah, I usually try to set up so that I'm entering by a way they're not.
Yeah, and that's just happy coincidence. My most productive site, when I was still living in Belldune, I had two sites. one really close to the house and then one driving distance from the house. And well, they're both driving distance, but one was, you know, 5 minutes and one was 15 minutes. And so funny, one of my most productive bear sites was you would get off the highway, get on a dirt road, go up the dirt road about halfway, and that's where the bear stand was. If you continued up that dirt road, you got to people's houses.
Like, right.
There's this one road that's really way back in the woods, and people are still living back there. And I hunt bears basically. You have to go farther in the woods to get to their house than you can to get to my bear stand.
Yeah. So, and of course, you always want to make sure your stand is set up, you know, in the correct wind direction for the whatever the prevailing wind is in your area.
Yeah. Wind is something that even with whitetail hunting that maybe increased my odds had I paid more attention to wind, but I've never
it's
been
so crucial. I mean, this is the thing.
Deer
bears,
it certainly is, but
a bear's sense of smell is 16 times more sensitive than a bloodhound's.
Yeah. But
and
that
there's,
being
there's,
said,
yeah.
In the springtime, they don't care. They know you're there. They come anyway because they're starving. I've had bears just look right at me while eating.
That's true.
You know. And something else that I do to deal with smell is the shirt that I wear that day while working at the bear site, chaining the barrel to the tree, limbing some trees, whatever. I take that shirt off and I tie it to the tree stand. And I leave, and I put another shirt on. I want them to smell me. I want them to know what I smell like, so that the first time they smell me is not the first time I'm there. So they've been coming to the bait for a week, and all of a sudden they're going to come in some evening, and they detect my smell, and they don't come in because, hey, that's unusual.
Yeah. Right? See, what I do is I do the opposite. I go in, and I'm a ghost, and I don't have any smell. So wash your clothes.
I use the sprays and everything, too. I use the dead downwind detergent, and I use the dead downwind spray and the earth scent spray. I use all that too, but I still think it's not
a bad
idea.
I've never done it myself, but another thing I've heard of is guys will take the clothes they hunt in and they keep it in a plastic bag filled with pine boughs.
Yep, I've done that, but I also use the Tink 69 carbon bag. So if I clean hunting clothes for the first time and I clean them in the proper hunting laundry detergent, I'll put it in those bags. They're scent-free bags, and I'll store them somewhere where the cat or the dogs can't get at them, right?
Mm-hmm.
So wind, wind is definitely important. I don't treat it like I should, but sun. I usually hunt in the evening. I've shot one bear in the morning. Some bear hunters don't even bother in the morning. All the other bears I shot were in the evening. It was getting so close that when we drug them out, by the time we got to the truck, it was dark. And that was in the springtime. So bear hunting is generally better in the evening. But I set my tree stand up so that if you're standing at the bait site and you look up at me, you get the sun in your eyes.
That's the best to do if you can.
Yeah. So
I find they don't seem to be bothered if you're just sitting there. They don't really see you. It's movement that they see,
mm-hmm.
right? So it's like I say, you can't I camel up and all that, but as long as you're not moving, you know, or wearing bright colors, you're probably all right.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, anything that like if you were wearing Hunter Orange, they wouldn't see the orange, but they would see the severe contrast, right?
That's right.
So, Matthew has left clearly.
No, I haven't. Sorry. My mic was muted just in case I sneezed. Because apparently whenever I sneeze, I like to mute my mic.
Well, listen, I never said that you weren't the better podcaster. I never said that.
Yes, Trevor, how can I help you?
By contributing.
Right. I've never bear hunted except that one time with Owen when we went out and sat beside a cornfield in the fall and waited for bears to come to us and let us shoot them, and they didn't for some reason. So,
you're in a location where you've got the habitat, you've got the bears, you could, you might want to try it sometime, because
I'm planning on coming down and trying it with Owen.
Is nothing.
That's my plan this year.
One of the most exciting things that you can experience as a hunter is watching your first black bear come into the bait site and be on the ground between 50 and 20 yards away from you. And then all kinds of fun stuff happens, like the cub climbs the tree next to you. And mom and the cub are talking. And neither are happy. And neither are you. Yeah.
Right.
It is neat because the very, very first bear I ever had come in, I'd sat there, I don't know, 3 or 4 nights and never seen a thing. And I was getting pretty, you know, kind of frustrated and kind of bewildered. Okay, what am I doing wrong here? And I'm sitting there, I have a book because I'm bored out of my mind. And so I'm reading this book and I look up and there's the bear. And it's already in. Like, you don't hear them coming a lot of the time.
It's amazing, isn't it?
It is
for a big, heavy 350-pound animal walking through the woods, and squirrels make 10 times more noise. They're like a ghost.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's amazing.
You ever try and watch one walk away for as long as you can?
Yep.
It literally disappears before your eyes. You're seeing it, seeing it, seeing it, seeing it. Where did it go?
Yep. It's no wonder you never see them in the woods. Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's pretty neat to see them come in. I had a mother and a cub come in last year. And the cub was really small. I mean, it was, like the size of my cat. I mean, it was really small. And it was the greatest thing to see it. There'd be some little noise, and she'd bark at it, and up the tree it would go. And it would go up like 45 feet in the air. I mean, it was way up there. And then come back down slowly and go over and get a few bites. And then she'd bark at it, up it would go again. The funniest thing was, though, they were in eating, and a raccoon. I watched this raccoon come in from the left side.
Hold on. It's 2011. Just
and
oh, that's anyways, the raccoon. Yeah, you told that story. Mama Bear almost got the raccoon.
Yeah,
that day.
Oh yeah, and came down and then circled way around behind and came in from the right side, and that Mama Bear went after it and just about caught it. It went up a tree and she went right up the tree after it. And it stayed up in the top, very top of the tree until the very, like, till it was gone, and I was leaving before it left.
Nice. Stink baits. What do you use? Do you use a stink bait?
I do a couple things. Because I mostly feed corn and molasses for my regular bait.
Right. Let's tell the listeners that maybe have never hunted bear, have no idea the purpose of a stink bait.
Well, I was going to talk about my entire.
Okay.
Like my whole thing, when I go to my bait, I take out some fresh stuff if it needs it. I put it in, and I have a can, like a soup can, nailed to the tree. You try to get it up as high as I can reach, but higher than what a bear is going to be able to kind of really get at it. And I put vanilla in it. And I take my torch with me, and I heat up the bottom of the can until the vanilla is boiling. And it's smoking and boiling, and the smell is just unbelievable. And it comes out, and off it goes down through the woods. Mm-hmm. And then the other thing,
you guys also do a honey burn. Have you ever heard of a honey burn?
Yeah, similar thing to that. Kind of does the same sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then the other thing I will do, I will get some rotten, go to a butcher and get a pig's head or some fat or something, anything rotten. And put it in a feed bag and poke a bunch of holes in it and string that up in a tree. So that's there 24 hours a day, smelling bad. So that'll help as well.
Hmm. It's a little bit different than how I, when I'm setting up a new bait or, restarting a bait site,
yeah.
I will, over the winter, keep scraps of meat, like raw meat, like if there's chicken that's freezer burned, pork that's freezer burned. I also really enjoy smelt season, because when smelts are out and my friends are cooking them, or if I'm having a smelt fry with my family, I will keep all the smelt guts. If I can get in the springtime mackerel that somebody had in their freezer all winter that they never got around to eating, I'll grab that. And then lobster season hits, and lobster's great too. So what I do is I get all this meat and fish, and I put it in a 5-gallon pail, and I duct tape it sealed tight, and I usually start it in the basement for a couple of days right before I think the wife's going to smell it. Then I move it outside and give it a little jump start, because we don't get the sun, right? We don't get the heat up here early enough to really get that brew to cook inside that bucket. But if it's nice and hot, you start this thing in like – the last week of April. You put it outside and you let that brew just rot in there. Find your location, find a tree, put tie rope around it, bring it up into the tree, where they have to climb for it, they have to work for it, you know what I'm saying? But they still have to be able to get it. Once it's up there, or actually before I put it up there, that's when I take out my cordless drill. And I drill holes in the bottom of the bucket on the, not in the bottom, but on the edge, on the actual side of the bucket.
Okay.
And I bring it up. And so all that soupy goodness starts to leak out.
Yeah.
And then the air flowing through the bucket will carry that stench through the woods. The bears will smell this. It'll draw them in. And I only start putting bait in my barrel once I've seen they've torn it down. So I'll put it in the woods. I'll leave it sit for 3-4 days. Then I'll go check it. If it's not torn down, I don't do anything. The day I find it torn down, and when I'm going back to check it, I have my bait with me so that I'm ready to put the bait in the barrel.
Yeah.
Once I find it torn down, that's the day I start to put the bait in the barrel. I've traditionally used bread. We call up the Ben's distributor. They bring back all the day-old bread from the grocery stores, and they cut the bag open so that it dries out so that people can't eat it or whatever. And then they sell it to pig farmers at like $1 a pallet.
Yep.
And you have to get your name up here. It's so competitive to get bread. You have to get your name on a list ahead of time, and they will call you and say, we have X number of pallets. Are you coming? And if you don't go right away, they go to the next guy on the list. If you don't answer your phone, they go to the next guy on the list. I used to maintain.
I can't even get it down here. Like, it's so competitive down here with outfitters and stuff that
They got the market cornered, yeah. So I don't feed rotten meat. A lot of guys around here will go to the butcher and they'll get scraps and fat and stuff like that. The only time I should switch off of the stink bait and go to the sweet bait and do the honey burns and do the vanilla and stuff like that. But you kind of have to be on hand to do that. Yes. Once it's established, I might do that to try and, okay, I'm here, guys, let's go. You know what I'm saying? But stink bait gets torn down, I start to put the bait in the bucket. On top of the bread, the best thing I've ever gotten my hands on was used French fire grease. Get it at McDonald's, get it at a local greasy spoon. They get a fresh jug of grease. They pour it into they pour it into the fryer. The old grease goes into the bucket that the new grease was in. Somehow they swap them out, and you just walk out, or you get your own buckets and you get the old grease. You pour the grease on the bread. You get a stump. If there's a rotten stump in the area, you pour the grease on the stump. If it's like an old cedar stump, it soaks it up like a sponge, and they eat it. They will eat the stump, literally.
Oh, yeah.
Rip a 4-foot stump out of the ground. That works great. And then once that's happening, then I just keep baiting them every day until I decide, okay, it's time to start sitting. And
Yeah, I usually like to be getting pretty good hits every day. And then I'll start sitting out. And I like watching them. They're fun. So I usually sit out. I usually try to sit out for one or two nights just to see what's coming. Just to kind of get an idea. Okay, what is it? Do I have like all mothers with cubs? Do I have, is there a boar? Is there a dominant boar that's coming to this bait? And I'm trying to figure out what exactly is coming.
And
then once I've kind of picked my bear, then I'll start sitting out and watching for it.
Yeah. And that's if you want the boar, and I don't want to shoot a sow. I don't, and I can tell them pretty good, and I'm good at the ground shrinkage and stuff. And obviously, you got to be careful if there's a sow with cubs. If a smaller bear comes out or whatever, any bear comes out, an ethical hunter will wait to see if she has cubs, because she will almost always come in by herself, check out the situation, and then call the cubs in.
Yep.
Later in June, if you're looking for a decent bear that you can turn into a rug, you don't get as good of a pelt out of a spring bear as you do out of a fall bear, but there are some decent pelts out there anyway. But if you want a larger bear and you want to wait for the boar, once the sows go into heat, the boars will follow them to the bait sites.
Oh, yeah.
And the sows are very protected because a boar will kill her cub to get her to go into heat. So it's never happened to me, but apparently it's not uncommon to find a dead cub at a bait site.
Hmm.
And that's questionable. A boar has found somebody else's cub and killed it to get her to go into a heat cycle and then he can breed with her.
Well, 2 years ago, I had them actually, I had five bears come in the evening. I sat there and one of them, it was after dark, there was still a bear there. And I was like, well, I'm not getting down out of this tree right now. And there was actually one pacing around the bottom of the tree that I was in. And it must have been a female, and it must have been a boar that was down in there, because all of a sudden it started woofing, and it came off, running straight for him at the tree I was in.
Uh-oh.
And then the bear that was down there,
it took off through the woods, and they chased you. They were, oh man, you should have heard the sounds. Just all, you could hear them go big arc all the way around. So I figured that was a good time for me to get out of there.
Yeah, yeah, get well again is good. The guy who taught me how to bear hunt, turns out he's not all there. We went in one night, and he had a bucket of oats, and it was like the second time I had gone, and we jumped a bear. And he was like, okay, stop, because as soon as the bear saw us, the bear just kind of ran about 20 yards away from the bait site and stopped and was huffing a little bit. So he put down the bucket of oats and said, just walk calmly to the tree and go up the tree, and we should be all right, because they will get territorial over the bait site, right? They think maybe you're in competition with them for the food. Yep. Anyway, we go up the tree, and my dear friend Danny says to me, he says, that's too bad. I really wanted to put those oats on the bait. I'm thinking, it's a bear. He can work a bucket. It's okay. He'll get to the oats if he wants them. I'm sure it'll be all right. I'm going to go put the oats on the bait. Danny, there's a bear on the bait. Yeah, yeah, it'll be fine. He'll leave as soon as I come down the tree, he's going to leave. Okay. Remember, we're bow hunting. So in all Danny's infinite wisdom, he says to me, cover me. I reach for the video camera. I turn it on. I say, dear Linda, this is how your husband died. Cover me. Cover you. This is going on YouTube. You're going to die. Nope, he was right. That's awesome. He got down the tree. As soon as he started walking towards the bait, the bear took off. He grabbed the bucket of oats. He poured it on the bait site and right back up the tree. Mass cojones. Yeah. Or no brains. I don't know. But anyway, he did it. He got the bear off the bait and went from there. So,
well, the second bear I shot, I stalked it. I actually snuck up on it. Oof. It was almost the last day of the season in June. It was really late. It was the last week anyway. I knew it was the last night I was going to have to hunt. And there had been a big thunderstorm right about supper time, right as I got home from work. And I was like, oh, you know, that's kind of a bummer, because I'd like to get out right as soon as I can so that I'm not disturbing them if they're coming in middle of the evening. And so I said, well, I might as well go out for, you know, a little bit of time that's left. So off I went. Parked farther away than I usually did and walked in just super, super quiet. I mean, I just snuck in and was like every footstep very careful, took my time. It probably took me like 15 minutes to cover the 50 yards that I went. And I stopped, and when I paused just before I stepped into the woods, because my bait is right on the edge of a field, I could hear the bear down in there eating. So I was like, okay, so there's probably a bear down there. So I got in a few steps. And I could see it, but it couldn't really see me. Again, I was all camoed up, and the wind was going the right way. So I would take a step, and in the leaves, it might make a little noise, and he'd look up, and I'd stop. I'd just, like, freeze mid-stride, and then he'd put his head back in the barrel, and I'd take another step. So I worked my way in until I was probably about 30 yards from this bear, and pretty close to where my tree stand was. And I must have stepped on a stick or something like that, and boom, it took off. But again, it didn't go very far. It only ran probably 30, 40 yards, not even that, 20, 30 yards.
They are pretty easy to spook, but then they remember they're the biggest thing in our woods.
Exactly, and it stopped, and I just squatted down. I was behind a little bit behind a tree, so I squatted down. I could see the bait good at this point. I just sat there and waited, and it walked back in, and it walked back in. I put up my gun, boom. So
it's also worth mentioning, when we're talking, you know, about spring bears, we talked about sows, we talked about cubs in New Brunswick, and I can't speak for the other regions, but I'm sure they're probably all pretty much the same. A sow in the presence of cubs or with cubs is protected in New Brunswick, meaning you're not allowed to shoot her.
That is the same in Ontario as well. I've been reading up a little bit about some Ontario laws, and that is also correct there. You're not allowed to shoot bears if you see cubs with them.
It makes sense, because they're not gonna make it, right?
That's right.
I've seen – I actually was guiding for a friend from Nova Scotia, and I asked him to let a bear pass because she had last year's cub with her. And okay. I thought to myself, you know, they spent the winter together. He'll be okay without her, but he's still with her, or – she is still with her, and there are other bears, so let's, you know, mom.
Well, I don't think the law makes a distinction. if it says sow with cubs. It doesn't say this year's cubs.
Well, she's not a cub anymore. That's not a cub anymore.
Oh, okay. So, at a year old, they are old enough to distinguish to say, okay, that's not really a cub. Like, they grow fast.
It wasn't football size, right? You can tell this bear was a year old.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I've never seen a cub out. Well, no, that's not true. I have, but I've never. I don't have enough experience to know the difference. So,
you could figure it out, Matthew, easily. You know,
one looks like a bear. One looks like a furry dog.
Yeah. Oh, okay. So if it's cute and cuddly, dog. You don't shoot the mommy. But if it's not cute and cuddly, go nuts. Is that what you're saying?
That's right. I walked in on a mother. This is kind of weird. But I'm pretty sure I walked in on a mother with two cubs and the year before's cub.
It's not uncommon. If a boar didn't run that cub off. And she didn't go in heat because she still had her this year's cubs and she was nursing. They would den together.
Yeah. So it was kind of there was three or four bears when I walked in on that. That was at my original bait, and you couldn't see anything until you got right up to it. And I was probably less than 10 yards from them.
Nice.
I had the rifle up. was ready.
Yeah. I've never done it with a rifle. And I tried to be a bow hunter for deer, and the only deer that I harvested, I actually took with a rifle. But when it comes to black bear, first large game animal I ever took was a black bear and took with a bow back in, 07, but I've never used a rifle, and you've used your 30-30, I think, on all of them, haven't you?
Yes.
And that's pretty much all I hunt. And that's what I want to hunt with. Like, I want to take my 30-30 for bear hunting. But I don't want to take my 30-30 because it's really pretty and I don't want to scratch it. I've often toyed with the idea of buying another one just for hunting that I could beat around and throw around the back of the truck and stuff. But it would still have to be a pre-64 and then I probably wouldn't want to beat it up. I'm such a gun snob. Anyway, let's talk about a little bit of the ethics and the advantages. Well, you know, we talked about ethical hunting and not shooting the sow. She has cubs with her, but why it's important to have a spring bear. I don't know if New Brunswick has ever lost theirs. I know Nova Scotia I may be wrong, but up until a couple of years ago when I was very active in bear hunting, Nova Scotia lost their spring bear season, and that's why I was guiding for my archery buddies from Nova Scotia who were coming up here to shoot spring bears. Ontario lost it, got it back. Some hippies tried to appeal in court to have it taken away again. They were shot down and put in their hippie place. Said, take your piercings and go, you vegans.
And, don't hold back. Tell us how you really feel there, Trevor.
Well, vegetarians are hypocrites. You see, if you care so much about the animals, why are you eating their food?
Oh, I was hoping you were going to say that. That's what I was going to say if you didn't.
I'll do you one better, Matthew. I told that joke to my mother-in-law, who's downstairs right now, so I have to be very quiet when I tell this.
Right. Because we don't want to, you know, hear your beating to death on the show.
Right. So I says, vegetarians don't make sense to me. If they care so much about the animals, why are they eating their food? So she paused, and in this deep reflection, she come back with, are you telling me that vegetarians eat like dog food and cat food? That's what I married into, folks. Anyway, speaking of eating, Owen, I know you eat everything. I mean,
yes.
It's not even a question for a second that you eat your bear. I also eat my bear. Bear around here has a real bad reputation as being gamey and greasy. And
well, here's where I think that comes from, if I can cut in here as a non-expert. Traditionally, most hunting is done in the fall, yes?
Yes.
And so I wonder if the majority of the bears kind of historically have been taken in the fall and people tried to eat them then. And I would imagine a fall bear would taste a lot, heck of a lot worse than a spring bear because a spring bear is nice and lean, whereas a fall bear is full of fat and grease, and apparently that stuff doesn't taste very good in a bear. So I'm wondering if that's kind of where that stereotype came from.
It's that, Matthew, and it's also how the bear is prepared. If you take a bear and have the meat cut into steaks and fry it in a pan, that apparently is just about the worst way you could eat a bear. I've also heard some people say it's the absolute best way you can eat a bear. But your point about the fat is absolutely correct. The flavor of meat is affected by the flavor of the fat. That's why when we get beef, we like a nice marbly steak, and we can see the fat marble all through the meat, and we absolutely love it.
Yeah, that's where the flavor comes from.
Yeah, that's right. If you, what tastes better? A hamburger made with extra lean beef or a hamburger made with regular beef?
Of course, yeah, the regular stuff is way better.
So it applies to the bears as well. Only problem is the bear fat, especially depending on where the bear lives and what the bear's been eating, can dramatically affect the flavor of the meat.
Sure. I mean, bears will eat just about anything. They're omnivores. They'll eat other dead things. They'll eat, you know, rotten carcasses. They'll eat anything. And so in the fall when they're gorging, they've eaten all this junk, this trash. And so, of course, they're not going to taste very good.
Yeah, in some cases, not always.
A buddy of mine, his first bear he shot with a bow was living near a blueberry field.
Oh, have you ever? That would have been delicious.
It was blueberry flavored bear pepperoni for everyone.
Oh, yeah.
So, what have you done with your bear, Owen? Just bottled, roast? What have you done?
I don't bottle any of it. Although I think you can, but we basically take the roast off. So basically, the hind quarters are come all roasts, and the front basically becomes all hamburger.
Right,
it's mostly how we do it. We don't really do steaks with it. No. We just do the back as roasts, and the front we grind it, and then we'll use it as hamburger, a great hamburger, or because bear meat has a lot of fat in it, inside of it, like it is quite coarse and marbly anyway, and so it makes a quite a nice hamburger.
Let's talk about the texture of the meat.
And yeah,
for anyone who doesn't know, the texture and the fiber of the muscle is incredibly similar to pork. You think about the long, like a pork roast, the long stringy fibrous muscle materials. A bear roast is very similar to that, but the color of the meat is dark.
You know, see really, I think it's more like beef.
I'm with Owen. Trevor, the first time I had bear was at your place, and I don't know if you told me it was bear. You just said there's roast in the roasting pot, go have some. And so I had some, and I said this was delicious, and turned out it was bear. I thought it was beef.
Well, flavor-wise, but consistency and as far as the meat is made, you also thought it was similar to beef?
I don't really pay that close attention to the fibrous tissue of the muscles of the animals that I'm eating, I guess. But
I find it's quite like it's more like a coarse beef.
Yeah,
that's what I kind of thought too. Yeah, see, anytime I think of pork, although I don't really do pork roast, I always do pork chops and then of course bacon. So
yeah, remind me.
I don't know.
Complain about Subway later. Anyway.
yeah.
So we do roast and hamburger.
Yeah, we do roast hamburger, and then we'll take the hamburger, regrind it, and mix in pork fat and make sausage with it.
Yeah, yeah.
And
now you've done all this yourself?
Awesome sausage. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, see, the first
one I don't trust anyone with my meat anymore.
Yeah, I've been lucky. There's one guy here I trust. The first one, the guy who I was with, Danny, who I thought I was going to videotape his mauling, he helped me debone it. The second one... I did myself. That was a long day. I shot the bear like at 9 o'clock and was out of the woods, down to DNR and back, and had it skinned and was starting to debone it by 11. And so my process, you know, at that time, knock off the hide as soon as possible and then start deboning. It's not like a deer. You don't knock off the hide and leave it hang for a couple of days.
Nope.
You know, not the fall. It's a little warmer. You got some days where it's 25 degrees out and you're hunting bear. Yep. Anyway, I debone it and then I trim as much fat as I can. And then I take the meat inside and I wash it and I trim it some more and then kind of paper towel it dry, put it in Ziploc bags, throw it in the freezer, and that's it. And then I take it out, thaw it, trim it some more, put it in the slow cooker with my patented bear recipe, onion soup mix, garlic plus, salt and pepper, 4 to 6 hours in the slow cooker, and away you go. After that, one that I did by myself, I swore I'd never do it again. I'd pay the $90 and get it cut up. And I did roast, boneless roast, sausage, which was amazing. And the following year, I did boneless roast again, sausage again, but the butcher's son was doing the sausage. It was way better than the year before. And then I had some extra stuff kicking around for a while. I also got hamburger, but it got too old. I never used it, so I didn't get to experience bear hamburger. He did cut out the filet mignons for me, but I didn't get around to using those either. So I took some leftover bear meat that I had and some leftover moose, and I brought it to Hank's. I don't know if he's a deli or what he is, but he makes pepperoni and he makes sausage and he sells them at the farmer's market. I was talking to him at the farmer's market one morning and he said, I'd love to work with bear. I've never worked with bear. So he made pepperoni for me out of bear and moose. That was something else. Yeah, pepperoni. And it was like, he said, technically it's shelf-stable, but...
Yeah,
I've never.
You better eat it all right now.
He wanted me to freeze it, right?
Yeah.
So, because he never made bear pepperoni before, so he made it the same way as his other meat, and said, it's made according to the other recipe, so it should be shelf stable, but freeze it anyway just to be sure. So,
well, I like to get all the fat off when I butcher, so I don't have to trim three or four times.
Me too. I'm throwing meat away. I'm trimming.
Yeah, I'm not trimming that much. I don't throw anything away. Even the fat, I keep the fat.
Yeah, but you're like,
because I make lard out of the fat. No, I'm not a hippie.
Hipster with that beard, right? Hipster.
Oh man.
Oh, are you gonna shave your beard now? Because it's cool to have one.
I don't know. I think I'm just gonna let it grow.
There you go.
A la Duck Dynasty.
But no,
I'll do that. Wait, you can't. Never mind.
Huh.
You mostly can.
Sure.
That's a cuttable offense. I'm sorry. Don't make fun of another man's beard.
That's right.
Yeah. No, I like the lard is pretty nice. It's amazing. You can melt bear lard in your hand.
Yes. You get so greasy.
The fat melts in your hand.
When you're working with the bear and you've got it hung up on the rack and it's upside down and you're skinning it, your hands are just disgustingly greasy from handling the hide. Like,
yeah,
it just turns to oil on your hands. I wonder if you could make good candles out of it, or if it would be too
soft for candles.
Too soft for candle.
Yeah, but apparently it makes incredible waterproofing, like for waterproofing leather boots and things like that.
Really?
Apparently it's amazing for that. It's the best.
I never did anything with. I kept claws, and then I lost them or threw them away or kept giving them away. What I did do for a while when I was shooting target archery is I had on my hip quiver, here I had all the fancy, colorful stuff with my name on it, and feet a target archery snob, and hanging off of my hip quiver was a ring made out of basically a paracord material. With a bear claw from every bear that I shot, a claw to represent every year. So, yeah. Right. Yeah, target archery quiver with body parts on it. Awesome. So, but I never got into making a chain or a necklace with a bear claw hanging off it. No.
No. Well, the first bear I shot was a pretty good size. It was 262 pounds. So it was massive, but it.
No. Average size for New Brunswick. New Brunswick does not have huge black bears. 250 to 300 is our average.
Yeah, well, that's a little on the big side, actually.
Oh, no, we've got some 450-pound bears out there, man.
Well, if you average to the extreme, but the majority of your bears are...
200, 250.
Anything bigger than 150 is considered trophy bear.
No.
Yes.
I don't know, dude. Well, I don't know. I know this. You measure the skull and all that for Boone and Crockett and Pope and Young, but I've never.
Yeah.
My skulls are all sitting in some backyard taxidermy shop in Woodstock somewhere.
Oh, really?
Yeah, long story. Thank you to. Anyway.
Nice.
Yeah. Not bitter.
No. Not bitter. No, of course not. All,
yeah. Anyway. Yeah, go ahead.
I don't know. I don't remember what I was going to say. Oh, what I did with my bear. That
you
one I got.
The first one mounted, didn't you?
Yeah, I got a half mount.
Yeah.
On that one. Actually, I think I got it done by the same guy where your hides are sitting. But
seriously?
Yeah.
My skulls, yeah.
Or your skulls, yeah. But
I'm sure there's not a lot of backyard taxidermists in Woodstock, so it's probably the same dude.
Probably.
Go over there and get my skulls, man.
I should do that. I will. I drive by there occasionally, so.
Yeah, when you see him in the back having a toke, stop in, say, hey, I want for a lot of skulls.
Yeah, I should do that.
All right.
Yeah, so it was pretty cool. And the interesting thing was the way I shot it, the bullet, because it was a slight angle and the bear was on the run, it lodged in the opposite shoulder. So I was actually able to recover the majority of the bullet.
Nice.
From the bear. So I have, and then on the skull, I cut out both kind of eye teeth.
Uh-huh.
So on the bear's like half
canines, mount. Canines, you mean?
Yeah. Half mount on the wall with like a log underneath of it with the feeder on, piece of driftwood or something that I used. And then I have beside it on a little flat spot in the log, I have one of the canines and the bullet.
I remember seeing that. I have all of the arrows that I shot my bears with, but the broadhead still attached, except for the second one, because I actually used it. It broke anyway, but I used what was mostly left of it as a handle to pull the bear up a hill. I took a piece of rope and I tied it around the bear's head, and then I tied it to the shaft of the arrow, and I used it as a handle to pull it, and I kept breaking the arrow. But the first bear I shot was in 2007 with a knockoff Hoyt bow called a Reflex, 65 pounds, and I was shooting, which is way more than you need for a bear. You can take a bear down with a 50-pound bow, especially today's bows and today's broadheads and whatnot. I shot it with a 125-grain fixed blade, a G5 Striker broadhead, and I hit him. He was just about perfectly broadside, and it went in behind the shoulder, through the rib cage, out the armpit, and then back into the shoulder and through the shoulder joint and completely passed through. So the arrow actually left the animal, re-entered the animal through the shoulder, and exited it again.
Wow.
So it was an entry, an exit, an entry, and an exit. And when we skinned the bear, you could stick your finger into that cavity where the arrow passed through the shoulder joint. And like it was just, couldn't get over the damage that this thing did. Nicked an artery on the heart on the way by. I was so proud of myself for the first shot ever. I nicked this thing's heart. Like it was just like textbook. Yep. And the bear went 15 yards, maybe. Yeah. When they get hit by an arrow, it's not like getting hit by a truck or a sledgehammer. It's a sharp, fast, what was that? And oh my God, I'm bleeding to death. Oh my God, I'm dead.
Yep.
They don't run and run and run. Sometimes they don't run very far when they get hit by a bullet if it's a good shot, if it's a good hit.
Yeah, mine never have.
It'll just shut them down. But in other cases, if it's not a good hit, that bullet will make them run and run, and then the damage will catch up to them. But with an arrow, they don't get that big hydrostatic shock. You know what I'm saying? It's sharp, it's quick, they bleed to death. If you go to my YouTube channel, I just posted the link on our Facebook page, the video of the last bear I shot. I shot with it's called Rage Broadhead. Rage is the manufacturer, and it's a mechanical broadhead, meaning that the blades are not fixed. They fold down on impact. The Rage Broadhead, when it opens up by slipping down before it goes in, and it makes almost a 2-inch hole. The exit hole on my bear, and I made a separate video just showing the damage that this broadhead caused, the exit hole was so big that when the bear laid down, his lungs came through that hole.
Wow.
There are 3 inches of lung sticking out the hole when the bear's laying on his side when I approach with my shotgun. Lots of, you know, as long as you're not afraid of graphic, it's all in the video. So, awesome. Mm. I think...
We should bring this back to guns a little bit.
Yeah.
I used one of those Leverution...
Lever Evolution.
No, it's just Leverution.
Oh, it's a different one that I'm thinking of then. Not the Lever Evolution?
Yeah, but they you,
how do you pronounce Surrey? Are you sure about this?
Do you want me to go up and get the box?
No, because you might use it on me.
No, they string it all together. It's just Leverution.
I think it is just one big word, but I don't know how to pronounce it. It doesn't matter. We know what you used. Tell us about it.
Well, 30-30, of course. So it's 160 grain, but it's a ballistic tip bullet that's used for a tubular magazine. And those things, I don't know a lot about hunting ammunition because that's about the only thing I've ever used. And it's put down everything I've ever shot with it. I mean, I haven't had anything run. the longest that the deer I shot with it was that it ran the farthest, and that was like 80 yards, 100 yards. And the bears have all been less than 20.
Well, gentlemen, I think we beat the spring bear topic to death. How much time do we have left?
Oh, we got just about enough time to wrap it up. Did we talk about how the Ontario hunt was back?
Yeah, remember I made fun of the hippies who lost in court because they were hippies?
That's right,
I think I called them vegans.
I just wanted to bring that up again because it was really funny.
You can't bring it up enough, really.
So, do we want to touch on a little bit about why the spring bear hunt isn't unethical?
Well, no hunting is unethical. Or it's called poaching. Oh, what was that? Sorry. I don't know how to use my phone.
Yeah, you certainly don't. No. So, anyway, like Trevor was saying, yeah, hunting isn't unethical. And if there's a legal season, you're not being unethical when you're out hunting. The thing is, with spring bear, and what so many people are up in arms about is that when you shoot the mama bear, there's a baby bear left without her mama. Well, here's a simple solution to that, is you don't shoot the mama bears with the baby bears.
That's why it's illegal.
That's it. You know, ethical hunters will not pull the trigger until they're sure that they have a good, clean shot on a single bear. So there's nothing unethical about this. And I think we had the discussion a while ago about hunting over baits. A lot of people seem to think that bait hunting was unethical, which, again, I think we put that to rest last time. But whether you're calling them...
Well, there's nothing ethical about a feedlot.
Yeah, whether you're calling them, whether you're planting food, or whether you're putting food out, you're doing the same thing. You're attracting the bear. Whether you're using calls or whether you're using food, you're still attracting the animal. What's the difference?
And I mean, well, when it comes to me, I've gone on a drunken rant about this before. I'm not a trophy hunter. So why should hunting be difficult? Why shouldn't I take every advantage possible to put myself in a high success situation, or high rate of probability that I'm going to... Wow, I'm trying to use big words and I'm not doing it right.
You're failing spectacularly.
Spectacular.
It's amazing.
Failure, yeah.
No, I hear what you're saying. Why make this difficult?
Hard. Yeah, why? You know, if hippies can go buy their meat at the grocery store, and that's
as easy
sporting.
As it gets. That's not sporting at all. They don't even let the cows run free before they shoot them in the head with that little bolt gun.
Exactly. So, the little bolt gun.
Well, and bears are really getting to the point they're a pest.
They really are.
I don't know where you are, but down where we are, there's a farmer in this local area who last year, me and a buddy figured it out, based on some numbers that he told him, he lost close to $90,000 worth of crops.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah, I don't remember the exact numbers, but I did read recently that bear tags in New Brunswick are down by a significant margin, and the bear population is up by a significant margin. Look, this is a simple cause and effect thing going on here. The less hunters there are, the more bears there are. We need more hunters to level out the population so that we don't have crop damage, livestock damage, whatnot.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, that's part of the plan. I mean, that's how hunting it can benefit. Part of the whole conservation effort uses hunters in for lots of different seasons, not just bears, to manage populations.
That's it. Yep.
So that they stay healthy.
All the animals that we hunt in this province are at or beyond their carrying capacity. If they weren't, we couldn't hunt them.
That's right.
That's why I got so excited today when I saw two white-tailed deer on the side of the highway, because there hasn't been a season in my zone since 1993.
Yeah.
Because they're not at or beyond their carrying capacity.
That's right. Yeah, no, hunting does a service to the conservation effort in countries, and it's a good sport to get into. You're doing a good thing for the economy and also the ecology.
We're probably preaching to the choir.
Probably.
Anyway.
Yeah. Why don't we move on to some iTunes reviews?
All right.
We actually got two of them. So I'm going to read them both because they were both awesome. The first one reads, just finished episode 28, funniest episode ever. I don't remember what that one was about, but I'm going to have to go back and listen to it because apparently it was awesome. I hope to hear myself in the future through time travel, because he's listening to episode 28 and we're on 55. So, yeah. He goes, the banter between you guys is really squirrel. Even though I haven't got my PAL yet, I hope to get it soon. You guys make the shooting sport sound amazing. And that came to us from Lord Lou, and it was titled Time Travel. So, yeah, in the future here, buddy, because it is going to be the future, because time only does travel one way, you will hear yourself in the future Even if you listen this week, it's still going to be the future because you wrote this a couple days ago.
So. Well, is he going to listen to this in the future, or are we receiving this from the past?
Yes.
You're both right.
Yes.
Yes.
So thank you. I'm going to have to go back and listen to episode 28 again, or at least get a synopsis of it, because I can't remember what it was about.
You probably weren't on it.
But apparently, that's probably why it was the funniest.
You haven't missed an episode, or there are no episodes.
No. So anyway, the next one.
Did you really have to point that out? Did you really have to swell his head that much more?
Well, I just wanted to make us feel bad, not make him feel good.
Whatever you guys need to do. Next one comes to us from Jamor66, and he writes, or he titles this one's Changed Mind. He writes, in the past, I have neglected this podcast because of all the pesky squirrels and rabbit trails. Compared to the other multi-host shows, it is really good information and entertainment with cross-border information, too, with very little or no pesky bleeps. So with a changed heart, I download it automatically. So that's actually really high praise, and I'm really happy to read that and to get that review.
Sadly, you took that review off another podcast's iTunes feed. Way to go.
Yeah, no, I'm just trying to boost ourselves here again.
You didn't even leave that for us, but...
That's funny. But no, that's great. We're very happy to hear that we're keeping our listeners entertained and that we're actually giving out some useful information every now and then. Mm-hmm. We'll try not to let it happen too often.
Yeah, few and far between, we promise.
All right.
The rabbit trails or the useful information?
Either or. Again, okay. Yes.
Squirrel.
Shoutouts. First one is from John L. from California. He bought our last T-shirt, the older original one, extra large, that we had last week. But then he went ahead and donated an extra $10 to the charity shoot. So he sent a PayPal for $30 instead of just $20. So John L., big, huge shout out to you. Thanks, man. Your shirt is already in the mail, so you should be getting that as soon as it gets to California, which will be quite some time, I imagine. Sorry.
Are they even going to let it into the state?
I don't know. It does have a picture of a gun on it with a pistol grip. So it's probably an assault gun picture, I guess.
All right, I got a shout out to Jeff Reese, who bought his daughter a pink 1911 GSG-22. She's got her own handgun now. Well, she'll get her pal someday. But anyway, it's her gun. It's pink. It's a 1911-22. She got that for passing grade 7. So congratulations, young little Reese, on passing grade 7. You know who you are. I'm not going to give out a minor's name on the show, but... congratulations on passing grade 7.
Like 9X and Justice and Liam and all the other ones that we've given out?
Their names were given to us by their parents.
Oh, I see. Gotcha.
Right. So,
right.
Yes, congratulations on passing grade 7. Enjoy your 1911. Back in my day, if I didn't pass, we didn't get guns for passing. We passed because it was our job. If we didn't pass, we got pistol whipped with our papa's 1911.
Nice.
My, how times have changed. We're now arming children for getting educated. I love this country. Only in Newfoundland. Well, he's not in Newfoundland, but they're from Newfoundland.
All right, then.
All right. So listen, let's wrap this thing up. Be sure to join one or both of our National Firearms Associations. They are the Canadian Shooting Sports Association and the National Firearms Association. If you've heard of the NRA and not these, you're a hippie. Also, be sure to check us out on the Gun Owners of Canada. Like us on Facebook. We're only at a measly 982 likes, which is still more than the Polite Society podcast, so that's all that matters. And don't forget to check out all the other shows on both the Reno Viola Outdoor Web Radio Network as well as the Crusader Podcast Network. Tons of great material on each. And the cool thing about the Crusader Network is it's international.
That is cool, yes. Canadian and American.
All right, gentlemen, take us out.
Keep your friends close.
Keep your firearms closer.
I'm talking lead.
See you guys next week.
So if you have any comments or questions for the show, please send an email to slamfireradio@gmail.com. Now go grab a gun and shoot something. When the talking is over, it's time to get a gun.